Welcome to the PreparedX Podcast, your complete source for crisis, emergency, business continuity, and security preparedness interviews, news, and much more. Now, your host, he creates chaos for a living, Rob Burton.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 29 of the PreparedX Podcast. In this podcast, I interview Deb Heilman, who's a PR coach and crisis management consultant, and she is the CEO of the Institute for Crisis Management, and they are located in the greater Denver area. I've known Deb for several years, and I can say that she's highly regarded within the crisis management field. In this particular interview, we covered a fair amount of ground with regards to the questions that I presented to Deb. She gave some great answers, so we had a great discussion. We talked about some of the weaknesses that organizations have in terms of their crisis communications. We spoke about how they found it difficult during a crisis to be able to respond, and we also touched on a little bit about individuals trying to get into this field. So there was some discussion around some advice on what people should be looking at doing to get into the crisis management field, as well as much more, including crisis simulation exercises. So again, we covered a lot of ground here. Deb is a very good good person to interview, and I think you're really going to find this one interesting. Here's the interview. Thank you. Hi, Deb. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Rob. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. I'm doing well. Before we get started, Deb, if you could, for the audience, just spend a few minutes talking about yourself and your career.
Absolutely. Well, currently I'm president and CEO of the Institute for Crisis Management. And the Institute for Crisis Management is a boutique consulting firm. We focus on crisis communications, planning, training, and consulting for our clients. We work with organizations of all types, really businesses, professional and trade associations, government agencies, a variety of different clients. I'm a professional business communicator. I've been doing it for more than 30 years, and I've worked both in the public and the private sector. I've worked a lot with nonprofits and public and private companies, leading a variety of different communications-related disciplines. I spent 15 years working in the healthcare industry, where I gained most of my crisis communication experience working with hospital chains and in the EMS arena for many years, managing communications for crises ranging from hurricanes like Hurricanes Katrina and Rita back in 2005 to federal investigations and wrongful death suits and all manner of different kinds of organizational crises that have been experienced in those kinds of organizations. So I'm a certified communication management professional. I'm a FEMA-trained incident commander, and just really enjoy working across a wide variety of crisis communications, planning, and consulting projects.
That's great. Well, we are very pleased to have you here for this PreparedX interview. And I'll get straight into it then, because you have a tremendous amount of experience. And so I think this is going to be a very good one for our audience. And so I think we'll just start off on the on the crisis management side in your experience. And there's always a lot of things that organizations could do or should do to prepare themselves. But what would be that one top piece of advice that you would give to an organization when it when it's preparing its teams for crises?
I think the one thing that I would tell people is don't underestimate the need to communicate with your stakeholders frequently and regularly, really just to let them know what's going on with the situation, what you're doing to fix it, and most importantly, what you're going to do to make sure that it doesn't happen again. I think very often managers and crisis managers in particular get so mired in the chaos of the crisis as it's going on that they have a tendency to overlook the importance of keeping all their stakeholders updated and informed about what's going on. And what happens in that dearth of information is that's where rumors get started and misinformation can start spreading, And once that happens, it becomes doubly difficult for the organization really to correct that misinformation really and to defend themselves against that misinformation.
Right. And that is a classic. I would say that comes up probably every time, you know, we conduct these simulation exercises. I'm sure you have the same experience that, you know, one of those issues that always gets raised is that stakeholder, knowing your stakeholders and knowing what to say and when to say it. I think you're dead on point, and certainly in my own personal experience. So that's great. What areas are commonly weak inside corporations in terms of their crisis management programs? Is it skills that individuals don't have? Is it the tools that they don't have access to or have not developed, or technology, or something else? In your experience, you know, what are those weaknesses?
There's a few of them I'd like to cover, Rob. And in our experience, corporations are commonly weak in a few areas. First of all, I would say leadership communication skills can really be an area of weakness, especially when leaders overestimate their own communication skills. And then they underestimate the need to communicate during a crisis in a variety of venues. But let's take, for example, Mylan Pharmaceuticals and the issues that they've gone through over the last several months over pricing on their EpiPen.
Right.
The interviews that I saw with their CEO, Heather Bresch, she seemed very ill-prepared to be able to explain to stakeholders why EpiPens were so expensive. And I think it was a demonstration of her own overestimation of her communication skills and perhaps a lack of preparation to be able to really justify what they were doing. I see also a lot of times some weakness in organizations' willingness to assess their own vulnerabilities. There's a sense of denial that things can go wrong. And I think then, as a result, they tend not to address those things in their crisis management planning process. And our research shows that smoldering crises really are the majority of crises that we see out there. And organizations are very poorly prepared to address things like discrimination, harassment, white-collar crime, and those kinds of things that can really give the organization a black eye and can cause long-term damage to their reputation and ultimately to the performance of the business. And we find finally that communications very often is not targeted to those key stakeholders that can have the most impact, either positively or negatively, on the reputation and the brand of the organization. So rather than thinking about mass communication to the world and worrying too much about media relations, we see organizations forgetting about that direct kind of communication to the stakeholders that are most important to their company.
And that's a great point. Would you say the employees is probably one of the most important stakeholders?
Absolutely. I think arguably employees are absolutely the most important stakeholders for any organization. And unfortunately, what we see is they're very often overlooked in the midst of the crisis and the chaos. And employees can be your best brand ambassadors, but they can be your harshest critics as well. And these days with social media especially, those criticisms can become much more public and can do a lot more harm to the organization than any other kind of communication going on out there.
Right, right. My next question, this came up a number of episodes ago, and I think it's a really good question, and we get different answers each time. So I'm going to present this question to you as well this time. You know, with regards to lessons that communication leaders can take away from some recent corporate crises, you know, what are those lessons that you're seeing that can be, you know, integrated into current plans and processes, and what leaders can really take away from some current crises that are either ongoing or that have happened in recent years? You know, which ones are they and why?
Well, there's a few things I can think of, Rob. First of all, I think it's of vital importance that the company speak with one voice and have a very consistent message in the midst of crisis. I think we saw the the issues of not doing this with Chipotle here a year and a half or so ago when they had their food safety crisis. Very early on in their crisis, their co-CEOs, and they were a unique organization having two CEOs, but those two CEOs were both speaking publicly, but they had very different messages. One CEO was very appropriately, we thought, talking about the problem and focusing on the things that they were going to do to fix it. And the other CEO was very publicly blaming both the media and blaming the CDC for blowing the problem out of proportion. And I think that really hurt Chipotle in the long run and, right. and hurt their reputation that their messages were so disjointed. So I think it's very important to identify one spokesman and make sure that you're speaking in one voice. I think you have to make sure you have a very small number of key messages, 2 to 3 points that you want to emphasize over and over again and really stick to those things. And then secondly, I think that communications leaders really need to seek expert advice, often from outside the organization. Talk to crisis communication professionals, public relations professionals. Get some expert advice and really heed that advice. With so many of the crises that we've seen recently, I think my impression it very often is that the leaders have either gotten bad advice or they've ignored good advice. And I think, worse yet, they've sought no input at all on how to best communicate with their stakeholders. I'll use Wells Fargo as an example. Very early in their recent crises regarding all of these fake bank accounts and unwanted bank accounts that were being opened, unfortunately, leadership there threw their low-level employees under the bus. And their first message was that, well, we've fired several thousand of these low-level bank employees that were responsible for opening all these accounts.
Right.
When, in fact, what they needed to do, I think, is take responsibility and be accountable at the very highest levels of the organization.
Oh, sure.
And so, you know, I don't know if they ignored bad advice or ignored good advice or didn't seek any advice, but certainly that was, in my opinion, the wrong approach to take in terms of communicating with stakeholders about how they were going to fix that problem.
Right, right. If for someone starting out in this field, Deb, they're just getting either into the industry from, you know, maybe it's from university or they're already in the corporate environment, but they want to move into the crisis management field. What kind of advice would you give someone?
You know, I think you can't underestimate the importance of a well-rounded training and experience. And my advice would be to learn everything you can about all the phases of crisis management, from learning how to assess the vulnerabilities of an organization to really the cross-functional planning and preparedness, because every function of an organization plays a role in crisis management and crisis preparedness. The importance of being able to participate in training exercises, communication, certainly, and understanding the value of consistent communication. And finally, business continuity.
Right.
And when I talk about business continuity, I'm referring to really the actions that are needed to get the company back to normal after a crisis, not just IT systems, but really the whole organization. And I think a lot of times that how do we get back to normal piece tends to get a little bit overlooked. So overall, my advice for newbies is go out and learn as much as you can about all these different areas, because ultimately it's how well they work, how well they integrate with one another that's going to help determine the success of the effort.
Right. In terms of crisis communication specifically, what are the, let's call it the three biggest challenges that organizations face in the midst of a crisis? So they're in the middle of it. I know there's, you know, social media always pops up in terms of, the challenges. But, what are those challenges and, you know, why are they big challenges for organizations?
Well, the first one, Rob, we just talked about, and I think that is communicating with employees. Again, I think they often tend to be overlooked in the midst of crisis and chaos, and they are your most important stakeholders. not only in day-to-day communications, but certainly when the company is in the midst of chaos. It's so very important that your employees hear first from you. You don't want employees to learn about what's going on inside their company through social media, through watching the evening news, or seeing a headline on the front page of the local paper. So really putting employees first and foremost, I think, is one of the biggest challenges for communicators. You mentioned social media, and I think social media listening is so very important. Communicators need to know where people are talking about their business and monitor those things constantly, and that includes websites and blogs and wikis and various social platforms. I think we tend to get too focused on Facebook and Twitter, and we remember and that there's a number of other places that people talk about our companies and our businesses, and we need to be very vigilant in seeking those sites out and paying close attention to where people talk about us and what they're saying. And finally, really tied to that is we need to engage in conversation and build rapport in those places where people talk about us well before a crisis hits. I think just as important as listening and knowing where people talk about us is being able to engage meaningfully with the people that are out there so that we can start building rapport. I think we shouldn't underestimate the value of that goodwill bank,
right,
if you will,
yep,
and building that rapport with our stakeholders, because once a crisis hits, it's way too late to try and build that relationship. As you well know, you know, having that goodwill can go a long way towards stakeholders giving us the benefit of the doubt when we do make mistakes and when we get into the midst of crisis.
Yeah, I love that one. I love the goodwill bank and building those relationships. And again, it doesn't have to be a full-time job, but it can certainly be something that, you know, as an outreach can happen on a fairly regular basis, and it doesn't have to be overly time-consuming, but it certainly pays dividend during the event. So I really like that one. I appreciate you providing us with that that piece of advice. When I put these together, Deb, I put some thought into who I'm interviewing, and although we don't do interviews every time, we do a fair amount of interviews. And with you, I was thinking back to some of our discussions we've had in the past, I know a number of the conversations we've had have been around the interface between industry and governments. And I know you've had a lot of experience on the front line, literally on the front line, with being kind of that front-facing individual as it relates to, preparedness. So if you could just speak, for a few moments, why is it important for organizations to work with government partners? We just touched on the goodwill bank before. These might be regulators as well as local first responders, again, depending on the industry, right? But, why is that important?
Well, certainly it's very important to have relationships with the organizations that regulate an industry that we might be in. But in talking about that interface between government agencies, it's so critical, especially in case of a disaster. And that can be anything from a natural disaster to a fire, an explosion, even mass shootings and workplace violence. So one of the things that we've found is that response agencies are a tremendous resource to help with preparedness and planning. They've got the tools and the training and can provide so many resources to organizations, quite often free of charge, to help them appropriately plan. But more importantly is when something does happen, you're going to have to work with those folks, whether it's fire,
right,
EMS, law enforcement. You're going to have to interface in the midst of crisis with those folks. And so it becomes so very important to meet and get acquainted with the public information officers in the communities where your organization has facilities or has operations, and to build relationships with them. I think, as I said, they can provide such tremendous resources and can be so helpful in making sure that in the midst of crisis that we can respond and communicate effectively. And so no different than listening to our other stakeholders and building goodwill and rapport with them, I think it's equally important to have that level of rapport and relationship with our response agencies.
Sure. Sure. And the final question I have, which, you know, may tie into, you know, your answer to the last question, is the importance of conducting crisis simulation exercises. Why is it important to conduct these exercises? And why is it important to include other areas of, you know, the internal aspects of the business, as well as those critical stakeholders?
Well, you know, it's so important to conduct exercises across all areas of the business, because they all may be involved in crisis response at one point or another. If you think about a sudden crisis or a natural disaster, you not only need leadership, you need operations folks who are going to be on the front lines actually taking the action and doing what's needed to bring a crisis under control. You need your purchasing department, because they're going to be able to provide access to the resources you need, whether it's, you know, having food and places for people to sleep and to be able to work on scene of a crisis. All these different departments play a really critical role in responding to a crisis. And if they don't exercise together and understand how their functions are going to interface and integrate, you're going to have another crisis on your hands, because the left hand's not going to know what the right hand's doing. And so, you know, you can much better identify if there are conflicts in your crisis management plan. If the communication plan, for example, and an approach you want to take with communication conflicts with perhaps what operations is going to be doing. It's really critical that people understand those open lines of communication and how important those are during the response itself. And the internal crisis management team members really need to be able to communicate as effectively with each other as we need to be able to communicate with our external stakeholders and our employees. So if you don't bring all those people together to practice and to train, they're not going to be able to work effectively together when the real thing happens.
Well, that's great advice, and we obviously concur, and we really appreciate your time today. That was an excellent episode. And so thanks for taking a few moments out of your busy day, Deb, to join us today. Just before we leave, Deb, do you have any final comments for our listeners? And how might they be able to get a hold of you or contact you?
You know what? We're really easy to find. You can look us up on the website at crisisconsultant.com or find us via phone. We have pages on LinkedIn and Facebook, so there's a lot of ways you can reach out to us through social media, or certainly can reach us by telephone at our toll-free number of 888-708-8351.
That's perfect. I know we'll be seeing you. I believe you're going to be in Boston on April 5th for the International Crisis Management Conference. Is that correct?
I am, and I'm really looking forward to the second year of the conference and getting the opportunity to interact with the other sponsors and all the folks that are going to be attending.
Well, you've been a great advocate of the conference, so we look forward to seeing you on April 5th in Boston. Have a great day, Deb.
Thanks. You too, Rob. Take care.
Yeah, bye. That's it for episode 29 of the PreparedX podcast. I do hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please rate us on iTunes, and also go to preparedx.com to sign up for our bi-weekly newsletter, which includes the latest blogs and podcasts, as well as other informative crisis management information. So again, go to preparedx.com to sign up for that, and we'll send you all our news and lots of other information on a bi-weekly basis. That's it for now. Have a nice day.